Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.
You may have heard of the mugshot legislation that passed in the state budget this month. Several news reports have called it a ban, but that's not entirely accurate. As the Legislative Gazette's Ryan Kyloth reports, most local law enforcement agencies will be able to choose whether they make mugshots public or not.
It won't surprise you that people go to all kinds of lengths to try to hide their mugshots. Maybe you remember this viral story from a few years ago. An upstate bank official arrested for a DUI who
reportedly went to multiple newsstands to purchase every copy of the Times of Wayne County, which had published his mugshot.
Never has Amber Streeter sold 70 newspapers all at once. But yesterday, Streeter says this man was the first.
When I gave him the 70, he asked, were there any more? And I told him no. So he went ahead and he purchased all 70, which I believe came to a little over $87.
Times, may I help you?
Ron Holdraker runs the Times of Wayne County, a local paper outside of Rochester.
The guy spent almost $1,000 buying up our papers. And I said, great. We had a great week that week. And actually, that story spread throughout the world. And that guy became more famous than he ever dreamed.
Holdraker says mugshots are his most popular section, along with obituaries. And this new legislation won't stop him from putting them online or in the paper.
No. We've been doing this for 30 years. So I was pleased when the local sheriff's departments said, no, we're not going to follow it either.
See, that's the thing. With the exception of the state troopers, local law enforcement agencies can decide if they want to keep making mugshots public or not. Plenty have said they'll continue. And Holdraker says the new law won't affect his business.
But we're missing maybe 4 or 5 mugshots a week. On average, we publish 30 to 40 mugshots a week.
Now, what do you think of the concerns that this legislation was supposed to address? That there are bad actors out here who are using it in an extortionate way, et cetera?
Yeah, there's always been bad actors in and the law could have been written for that.
The objective here is to protect individuals who are not convicted of a crime in many instances from having their mugshot photos be publicly listed into perpetuity.
Alfonso David is chief counsel to Governor Cuomo. He cites the example of bad actor mugshot websites that put up people's photos and charge a fee to take them down.
Our goal is to stop this nefarious practice. That's really tantamount to extorting people who have some interaction with the criminal justice system.
So why not go after the bad actors, websites that are doing this, instead of changing New York's privacy laws?
Because we studied other states who have tried to do that, and it has been unsuccessful.
And has this approach been successful in New Jersey and the other states that have done it?
Yes. It's been on the books in New Jersey, in Georgia, in Washington State, in Montana, in Kansas for quite some time. And we're seeing a positive impact in those jurisdictions.
Here in New York, you know, we've already seen just in the past week lots of local law enforcement agencies, sheriff's office, et cetera, saying they're going to ignore this and continue as before. So is the legislation effective if nobody opts in?
Well, I wouldn't assume that the comments from a few law enforcement officials in certain parts of the state are representative of what other law enforcement officials will do.
David says it may take years before behavior changes and more agencies choose to stop making mugshots public. They'll certainly remain in the Times of Wayne County, where Ron Holdraker says they can be an effective deterrent.
A lot of people, when they're caught, the first thing they say in Wayne County is, oh, is my mug going to be in that paper?
In Albany, Ryan Kyloth.
Last week's decision by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency regarding General Electric's cleanup of the Hudson River has drawn strong reaction from politicians and environmentalists, with New York State officials threatening to sue the federal agency. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard reports.
The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency issued a certification of completion of the remedial action for GE's dredging of toxic PCBs from the Hudson River. The company discharged the contaminants from its facilities in Fort Edward and Hudson Falls for decades. EPA Region 2 Administrator Pete Lopez says the certification is for the terms of a 2006 consent decree with the company. GE dredged contaminated sediment from a 40-mile section of the river from Fort Edward to Troy, placed concrete caps on certain areas, and performed habitat restoration work. Long-term monitoring will continue. Lopez said GE will remain on the river for decades.
GE is not off the hook, and even for the work that it's done. If we find that the work that was done is not protective, they may be called on to do more. It's very possible.
Lopez describes the certification of completion for the remedial action as a legal receipt for the tasks required of GE for the Superfund cleanup in the consent decree. The move has drawn pointed criticism from local, state, and federal lawmakers. Governor Andrew Cuomo and Attorney General Tish James, both Democrats, announced that the state would sue EPA over its declaration. New York State Department of Environmental Conservation Commissioner Basil Segos called EPA's decision a total failure of leadership at the federal level.
This is a giveaway to corporate polluter, really one of the largest and most visible Superfund sites in the country.
Segos points to PCB levels in fish samples, showing concentrations higher than EPA's acceptable range. He says EPA could have paused its decision to allow for more investigation on the river.
But instead, they issued the COC, and it contains such things as a covenant not to sue, which is going to make their lives and our lives very difficult if we need to secure more dredging and more cleanup in the future.
Environmental organizations and politicians up and down the Hudson are joining in condemning EPA, including Ned Sullivan, president of Scenic Hudson.
Its issuance of a certificate of completion flies in the face of science, the law, and its pledge to find a consensus position on the fate of the river with New York State and key stakeholders.
Republican Dutchess County Executive Mark Molinaro said the county will not allow the EPA decision to stand as is.
Dutchess County supports the governor, the attorney general, and the DEC's action to hold the EPA accountable, and if necessary, would join in litigation. We know it is that important. It's that important today, and it is that important for the generations of people who will follow along what is perhaps the most significant waterway in America.
Lopez says EPA hopes the state would not pursue a lawsuit, but said EPA's strict interpretation of the 2006 consent decree is accurate.
If they feel our interpretation is not correct and we can't convince them, and if they feel they need to move forward with a lawsuit, that's okay, but we're certain that we're correct with our interpretation.
In a statement Thursday, General Electric said it has met all of EPA's commitments and that the declaration confirms GE successfully completed the Hudson River dredging project. But also Thursday, in its second five-year review of the project, EPA said it would defer a determination on the protectiveness of the remedy for human and environmental health until more data is collected, including fish tissue data. Right now, it's considered unsafe to eat fish from the Hudson more than once a month.
Bottom line is, if we see that the remedy is not performing, we put together our findings, we trigger the reopener provisions, and that's what drives the conversation. The issuance of the certification becomes immaterial to this whole discussion. It's really data-driven, and again, back to the issue of protectiveness.
Molinaro, however, contends EPA has weakened the position of the people of the Hudson Valley who have fought to restore the river's health.
They may want us to believe that it's a wait and see, but there was no need to allow that.
Lopez said it could be 50 years before a final certificate of completion of work is issued for the entire project. In a related but separate issue, General Electric will continue to address PCB contamination in Hudson River floodplains, as per a 2014 consent decree. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Well, the governor, the New York State Assembly, and the Republican minority leader Brian Kolb, who you spoke to for your Capital Connection program this week. It'll be on this afternoon at 3 p.m. Quite a discussion. The issue, the Gold Star Families Program. The governor is now called to expand that, but it was blocked in the state assembly. Kolb was hopping mad about it.
Well, let's face it, there is a developing fractious relationship between the governor, the Democrats in the Senate particularly, but often in the Assembly, who have a different view on things than he does. He's very angry because he says that the children of those people who were killed deserve to go to college free, and he's going to make it happen, he says. I don't see how anybody can argue with the governor's position on this. There is no good reason that for, you know, a fairly small amount of money this country pays back to people who made the ultimate sacrifice.
It led to a pretty interesting discussion, too, about, and you nailed it with your observation of the illness that plagues politics today, which is this severe partisanship. You're just not going to support something that the other party does.
Well, it's something that the people don't respect. You know, I like to think that I'm capable of calling it both ways, as I just did. You know, it's a question of right and wrong as opposed to what's good for the political party right now. If they look like a bunch of angry people who are never going to give a break to the other side, it doesn't play well with New Yorkers. And it risks what they have. Instead, David, of being judicious about what they're doing and saying, okay, this is right, we're going to go with it, or this is wrong. No, the other guy said it, so we're saying the opposite. That's just not good.
Alan, let's just continue for a moment with your conversation with Minority Leader Kolb, who was not happy about this proposed idea of what? Rent regulation upstate?
Yeah, you know, there's rent controls in New York City. This has always been very contentious. The state Senate under Republican control insisted on this. And little by little by little, the landlords were winning that fight. They were getting more. People were very defensive about this. I have two friends. They were college professors. They both quit their jobs in order to preserve their status because they were making too much money for rent control. Now, there are Democrats, once again, maybe overplaying their hands, who are saying, let's have rent control upstate, too. Now, the question is, do you really need it? In Albany, for example, we know that, I know from my Legislative Gazette class and others, that there are many apartments readily available. People are not exploiting that situation. You go to a place like Ithaca, believe me, where my kids went to college at Cornell, you know, there is a premium on apartment space. This is something Democrats are for. Look, there are more tenants than there are owners. And the owners may I say, tend to be more Republican than Democrat, although I don't think it's always true. In any case, there is now the specter of bringing this rent control program upstate. And, of course, there are many people in the real estate industry and others who are quite angry about that. But you'd have to prove, I think, that there's a need for it.
Well, finally, the issue of the pay raise. Leader Kolb, Republican again, in the assembly, said he didn't vote for the commission for the pay raise, and you pushed him on the governor's pay raise, which he acknowledged he thought was cheap to pass it in the middle of the night.
Well, yeah. I mean, I happen to believe that this governor, and any governor, George Pataki or this governor, deserves money for running this huge operation, this state. I think that is correct. It's almost unarguable, although polling is showing people don't like it. You know, you run a hospital these days, you make $1 million in some cases, or many more millions. But the methodology for getting there is what is suspect. So obviously there was a deal made somewhere along here. It was, as Kolb says, in the middle of the night. And what should have happened is you said, okay, if we're going to raise salaries, let's raise our salaries and let's raise the governor's salary and let everybody see it and scream about it. Instead, it came on very suddenly. And that is suspect.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. As lawmakers debate whether to legalize recreational marijuana in New York State, many are already considering its possible effects. The Innovation Trail's James Brown talked to businesses in the Rochester area that are preparing now.
When you walk into OptiMax, you instantly hear the buzz of people working on millions of dollars of machinery. The Victor Company is an optical manufacturer known for creating the lenses for the 2020 Mars rover. It's tough to imagine people using these machines while high, but with legal recreational marijuana a real possibility in New York State, that's something the folks at OptiMax are thinking about.
You have to have some rules that meet the expectations of the workforce, that meet from a compliance standpoint, that help make sure people understand their limits and their bounds.
That's Ali Mendoza, the human resources director at OptiMax. Mendoza says the company has written and unwritten rules about how people conduct themselves at work, including those who may be under the influence.
I mean, you can't capture everything in a manual, or it'll be a 7-inch thick book of just things that folks will never read or get into. You have to have them part of the process.
Mendoza says the company handles these situations on a case-by-case basis.
There's ADA protections for some cases. There's no tolerance for other cases. There's different approaches that need to be taken when you have somebody that you believe has an issue or that has come to work in some type of condition that you don't think is normal.
At Klein Steel, the approach is different.
If somebody comes in and they're under the influence of drugs and drop a 10-ton plate on somebody and kill them, and we didn't know, but should have known, we're liable. It's that simple.
That's Mike Young. He's the president of Klein Steel. They sell steel to contractors large and small.
We're dealing with steel, which is heavy and dangerous, right? Yeah, I've never seen a piece of a human skin fight a piece of steel and win.
Young knows everyone in Klein's giant warehouse by name. Some people are tagging massive stacks of steel. Others are cutting it. They're using machines with lasers or high-pressure jets of water. Young says bad judgment in this environment puts everyone at risk.
I saw a guy, it's been 20 years ago, almost kill himself. His blood alcohol limit was 3 times the legal limit when we tested him. That's very dangerous. Now, he maimed himself. What if it had been somebody else?
Klein Steel and OptiMax drug test job applicants. If you fail, they won't hire you. Both companies test employees randomly. If you fail that test at Klein Steel, you're fired. Young says if recreational marijuana is legalized in New York, it will complicate the testing process. Tests can show marijuana in your system days or weeks after the high is gone.
They're stuck with the untenable choice of, do I face a discrimination suit, or do I face, accidents in the workplace?
Beth Cordello is a labor lawyer who's worked in the field for 16 years. Cordello says how cannabis is legalized in New York means everything.
Let's say that the statute that passes is silent on the issue of whether employment is protected. Then we're in unknown territory.
She says the territory would likely lead to a court challenge.
The next logical statute to look to would be the lawful activities statute under New York labor law, which says that you can't discriminate against somebody for their use of lawful substances off the clock.
But there's a catch.
Colorado recently had exactly that case where their recreational marijuana law is silent on the issue of employment. So somebody sued under the lawful activity statute, and the court determined that since it's illegal under federal law, their lawful activity statute will not protect people who use that on their own time.
Cordello says that New York judges typically side with the workers in this scenario, but there's no way to know until there's a court challenge.
That's the Innovation Trail's James Brown reporting. The Adirondack Council has issued a report outlining the damage occurring from inappropriate ATV use on public lands. It calls for new legislation, including a statutory ban on recreational ATV use in the Adirondack Park. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley explains.
A number of environmental and conservation groups are calling on the state legislature to take action following the release of Wrong Way, How New York State Can Course Correct on ATV Use by the Adirondack Council. Executive Director Willie Janeway says they want to address the misuse of ATVs to help forest rangers do their job.
The forest rangers have identified ATV use, quote unquote, as the most problematic activity they're dealing with. Right now, it is not against the law to do motorized recreation with all-terrain vehicles on hundreds of thousands of acres of forest preserve. The state discourages it. They have policies against it, but it's not codified in law. So having that stronger protection would create an additional layer of preservation for the wild character of the public lands. And at the same time, it can help make sure that appropriate use is allowed to continue.
In 2003, Protect the Adirondacks issued a similar report detailing ATV use in the Adirondacks. Rutted and ruined ATV damage on the Adirondack Forest Preserve also called for stricter regulations and state legislation to limit access on public lands. Executive Director Peter Bauer says although the DEC eliminated ATV use in the forest preserve, illegal trespass has become problematic as use of the machines becomes more popular.
Since that time, what we've seen is that trespass on the forest preserve by all-terrain vehicles continues to be a problem. We've also started to see that illegal ATV use on city streets, it's become a problem in some of the upstate urban areas as well as New York City. We need a comprehensive system to regulate ATVs in New York State, but we also need to protect our most important natural areas and that there are penalties and enforcement to protect these areas.
Adirondack Council spokesman John Sheehan says when Protect's report was issued, the state began to make progress, but it stalled.
We've documented over the last decade damage to every corner of the Adirondack Park from ATV use and misuse. What we've seen is that the current state policy hasn't been effective in reining in this behavior. So we feel it's necessary for there to be a state law that the rangers can use to issue tickets that will actually have some sort of deterrent value.
Adirondack Park Local Government Review Board Executive Director Gerald Delaney says he's opposed to the portrayal of ATV users in the park.
An outright ban is just the wrong way to go about this. Government agrees that there are places on the forest preserve that do not have and cannot support ATVs. But we find in their report that they pick and choose what things they want to put in the report to try to paint all ATV users as wild outlaws. Quite truthfully, I feel this is an all-out assault on rural New York. We need to deal with the enforcement issues, but just because one person breaks the law doesn't mean we have to outlaw it.
Delaney also believes the data presented in the report is skewed.
That report compares the whole state, which leads me to believe those numbers may not be as severe as they may look. The problems may be more occurring outside the park, and we don't have any miles of ATV use on the forest preserve.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
According to a new poll, most registered voters in New York support the plastic bag ban recently passed by the state legislature, but not the potential banning of mugshots. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas reports.
The Siena College Research Institute poll released Tuesday considers several proposals included in the $175.5 billion budget approved by the Assembly and Senate April 1st. Siena's Steve Greenberg says voters like a good share of them.
Making the 2% property tax cap permanent. 64% of New Yorkers think that will be good for the state. 22% think it'll be bad. Banning the use of single-use plastic bags by a 62 to 33% margin, New Yorkers say that will be good for the state. Eliminating bail, monetary bail, for misdemeanors and nonviolent felonies by a 55 to 38% margin, voters think that will be good for New York.
109th District Assemblywoman Pat Fahey, a Democrat, says banning the bags was a big win for New York.
The second state in the country to ban plastic bags, $23 billion
single-use bags used every year just in New York, each year.
Greenberg says other proposals were not so popular with voters.
Requiring online retailers to collect sales tax from purchases made by New Yorkers. 46% think that will be good, 48% think it'll be bad. And the new congestion pricing plan for Manhattan, 41% think it'll be good, 44% think it will be bad. But one proposal is very unpopular with voters, and that is banning the release of mugshots by the police. 31% of New Yorkers think that'll be good for the state, 58% think it will be bad.
Fahey says the mugshot item is not a strict prohibition of photographs.
So we've had scam artists, if you will, on mugshots that for people who were found perfectly innocent yet still have a problem with having these mugshots out in perpetuity. So the problem is the mugshots have been abused, so this is an ability to try to rein that in and prevent the abuses that we have seen with the use of mugshots, but it does not preclude law enforcement's ability to use those mugshots where appropriate, especially when a suspect is at large.
Greenberg says 63% of voters polled opposed Governor Andrew Cuomo's salary hike from $179,000 to $250,000 by 2021.
Governor Cuomo's standing with voters, little change since last month. Right now, 47% have a favorable view of Andrew Cuomo, 48% have an unfavorable view. How about public campaign financing? By a margin of 63% to 27%, voters oppose this new public campaign finance plan and commission that was enacted as part of the budget.
The poll of 735 registered voters was conducted between April 8th and 11th. It has a margin of error of 4.1 percentage points.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas. And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1916. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.